money. Quickly to Wall. Wall measures. Beal gets open for three. Dagger! They don't have any time.
Here comes Pierce with 5 seconds left. Pierce with three. Pierce with two. Pierce fall away at the horn. It's gone!
Morris, Ball, Beal, and Gortat. Porter can't find anybody. He gives it to Wall. Working against Bradley for three.
Hey, welcome to Dash Radio's Locked On Wizards show on the Nothing But Net station. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm your host, Noah Getzel, and we're joined by an awesome guest. I've actually never had anyone on Truth About It before, so we've got Troy Halliburton tonight to talk about the major news. GM Ernie Grunfeld, I guess it's not necessarily news because he still has his job, but he received a one-year extension. We're going to talk about why it's been under wraps so long, why in the world he got this after, you know, all of his faux pas and 14, 15 years. He's been tenured way too long with the Wizards without any championships, any 50-win seasons, just one division title. And finally, we're going to talk about the similarities between this Wizards season and then the 2015-2016 year where the Wizards barely missed the playoffs and kind of struck out in free agency that summer. So they won 40. They were 41-41 that year. This year they finished, 43-39. So now we welcome in our guest, Troy. What's going on, dude? Thanks for joining us. And tell us a little bit about yourself. How long have you been working with Truth About It?
Yeah, thanks so much, Noah. So I've been writing for Truth About It. This is my third season covering the Wizards, writing for Truth About It. And I kind of got into it. I went to high school with Kyle Bidai, the founder of the site. He's a few years ahead of me at Gonzaga High School in D.C. And, trying to just come in. I think Truth About It was probably one of the first wave of, you know, basketball blogs to kind of step up on the scene in like 2008, 2009. And I think there's been a lot of coverage, you know, surrounding, you know, that Wizards team and, you know, the Gilbert Arenas and, you know, those years where Gilbert had his own blog, and that was...
Was he blogging first, or did you guys start it up first, you know?
I think that Truth About It was around before Gilbert started his blog.
Okay.
And so I actually got some insight on the Gilbert blog. I did, like, a little interview with Dave McMenamin from ESPN at the beginning of the season. And when Dave was, he was at NBA.com, he was actually the ghostwriter for Gilbert Arenas' blog.
Oh, that's awesome.
I know. I learned that tidbit of information myself just recently. So, yeah. Truth About It is, you know, as somebody put it recently, you know, first generation basketball blogging. And, you know, we're just trying to take over for the next wave and covering D.C. sports.
And you live in the Bloomingdale neighborhood, D.C.? I used to live right over there. I'm in Petworth
now. Yeah. Right at First and V, near Rhode Island Avenue. Bloomy, that's my neighborhood. So
that's cool, yeah. I was at between First and Second and U Street, so, you know, just like a block away.
Okay, we were literally neighbors.
Cool. So what was your reaction when you found out, of course, our good friend Candace Buckner, beat writer for the Washington Post, she's the one who broke the story today. Here on Thursday, that not only was Ernie Grunfeld given an extension, but this happened way back in November. So, what was going through your mind? I am frustrated, but not surprised.
I'm definitely not surprised. Frustrated is probably the best word I would use to describe the news or the official news that Grunfeld had got another extension. But I think this is a tact that the Wizards as an organization have used in years past. I mean, Ernie has, since the 2014 season, I think this is his second secret extension that he's gotten without, you know, them notifying the media, which is kind of perplexing because, you know, it kind of goes against, the operation of what other NBA teams do. Like, you know, if a GM gets an extension, you usually have a press release and a press conference and, you know, Q&A and being able to, you know, ask the GM questions and about the, you know, the state, basically a state of the franchise. And, you know, that's something that I think that the Wizards as an organization has kind of neglected. And I don't know, I think it really, the kind of secrecy behind it leaves the fan base only asking questions. And as far as what the Wizards are doing, I think that they are doing it in secrecy because, I mean, let's be honest, Ted knows how the fan base feels about Ernie as a GM. I mean,
right. Literally
every time Ted Leonsis tweets anything, he could be tweeting about a charity event. The first tweet underneath is going to be somebody say, fire Ernie.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he knows the voice of the fan base and how they feel about Ernie Grunfeld as the general manager. So the fact that he's doing this in secret, like, I think that it's very obvious that he's doing it in secrecy on purpose because, you know, he doesn't want to have to deal with the, you know, kind of fallback from the fan base.
And, you know, among the current NBA executives, only Pat Riley for the Heat, R.C. Bufford for the Spurs, and then Danny Ainge with the Celtics, who obviously have a boatload of young talent and look like they're never going to be a bad team. All of those guys have championships. They're the only ones who have been around as long as Grunfeld. You know, Grunfeld in his 15 seasons, he made it to the postseason 8 times. They've never gone past the second round. What was it? 4 times with the current squad, and then was it 3 or 4? I can't remember. With the Arenas, I think that was 3 times.
Yeah, I'm not 3 sure times what the with last the Arenas. Was. Then, actually, no, I think it was 3 times.
06 through 09. So 05, 06. Yeah, okay. I mean, when you look at this stat, I think tells it all. In those 15 seasons, you know, teams obviously have down years and up years, but his overall winning percentage is 442, which is hovering at, you know, like the spot that'll get you just out of playoff contention.
Right.
And it ranks 23rd out of 30 NBA teams. I've got to check who's below, but it's not a good look, and it's pretty surprising to me. I mean, of course, we can both mention we're not surprised because it's just the way that things have gone for the Wizards throughout, you know, I'm 27 years old and I've been a fan throughout his tenure, but it just seems like the Wizards are a franchise stuck in the mud. And you look at some of the teams that have rebuilt successfully, like the Warriors and the Celtics over and over, and it's just like the Wizards, I don't really know what long-term plan they discussed with John Wall that made him want to sign his multi-year extension, aside from, hey, you're getting a ton of money and nobody else can offer you this money, essentially, because I don't really know what the Wizards are doing. They have no cap space, and it's all because of bad contracts that Ernie is the mastermind behind. So given the financial situation the Wizards are in, it seems pretty dire, right? Like, there's no real reason after this year, unless you want to completely blame John Wall's injury, that he would be able to get another year. And he got this contract back in November, so people thought, you know, the Wizards would be, I don't know, like a top 4 seed and make a run, but obviously that didn't happen. It's really frustrating to the fan base, first and foremost, because they have high expectations. They don't want to stay a middle of the pack team that inches into the playoffs but can't do anything. So it just looks like, you mentioned this right before we got started, do you feel like Ted is too concerned about the bottom line and raising ticket prices? And I think he mentioned like TV ratings in his press release reviewing the season. Do you feel like he has a vested interest in championships, or from his actions, is this kind of a resounding no, you know, let's keep with the status quo and see what happens?
Yeah, well, I think that it's very obvious that he doesn't have a vested interest in winning championships, because the Wizards as an organization haven't really done the things that championship-contending teams do. You know, championship-contending teams don't sell draft picks. They buy draft picks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, championship-contending teams, you know, try to use every mechanism given by the NBA to try to develop young talent in order to build up the back end of your roster. So that would include having a functional D or G League team now. That would include using up all of your roster spaces. The Wizards went the whole season with their 15th roster spot unused up until they signed Ramon Sessions right before or right after the trade deadline.
Right.
And then the newest mechanism that the NBA has given teams in order to develop young talent was the two-way contract.
Mm-hmm.
And the Wizards were the only team in the NBA this year to not use both of their two-way contract spots. So I think that with that information given, like, that, those are the things that championship-level teams do in order, like, to, in order to win a championship, you have to be, you know, almost picture perfect in, you know, every aspect of running your organization. And Ted has, you know, he's kind of led the people astray because he says in his press releases that, you know, he wants to win a championship, but, you know, the actions really aren't backing, you know, that sentiment up.
I think, yeah, he's just saying it because that's what the fans want to hear.
Exactly, that's what the fans want to hear. And then back to Ernie Grunfeld, I mean, I think we have to look at, we have to start back with Ernie's, you know, original tenure. So he was hired in 2003. He was hired under Abe Pollin. And so he had a personal and business relationship with Abe Pollin. And then, you know, God bless his soul, once he passed away, Ted Leonsis took over. And, you know, as a businessman, he decided, you know, I'm not going to shake anything up. I'm just going to roll with what we have. And he kept Ernie. I guess Ernie, whatever it is that Ernie told him in that initial meeting, he has convinced him that he's the best man for the job. And, you know, Ted has probably not let go of that sentiment since then. So, you know, once Ernie got the job, you know, I'm not going to lie, that the Gilbert Arena situation, him bringing guns in the locker room, that, you know, that set the Wizards franchise back a couple of years. And to Ernie's credit, I will say this, he drafted well 3 out of those first
14
years
essentially, yeah. 3 out of 14 years.
three out of the 14 years.
Maybe 4. Yeah, Oubre's a good pick, too.
Oubre's
good.
Those initial years after the Gilbert Arenas incident, you know, they got Wall in 2010, Beal in 2012, and Otto Porter in 2013. Now, granted, when you look at NBA draft statistics, you know, when you have a top 3 pick, the percentage chances of you hitting on those picks is astronomically high. Not astronomically high, but if you're doing your job by doing that. So
yeah, I mean, there are a few Anthony Bennett's and Kwame Brown's and Michael Wikandis, but you know, generally when you get one of those picks,
there's a chance that you can blow those picks. So like I said, to his credit, he managed those picks well. But I mean, as far as, you know, his track record as a Wizards GM, you know, that it probably stops right there.
The only other positive moves I can think of, and we'll talk later about the worst move that Ernie has ever made, but I guess, you know, bringing in Gortat and bringing in Markieff. Gortat, now looking back at it, his contract is very hefty given how old he was going to be and still making $13 million a year or whatever. But Markieff Morris, even though he's inconsistent, we got him for a bargain aside from the draft pick, because I think we only gave up Chris Humphreys and DeJuan Blair and a first round pick. So those are maybe, like, you know, some moves that you can't argue with at the time, aside from maybe selling the future a little bit. But I'll bring it up now. What do you think is the worst move that Ernie Grunfeld has ever made that, you know, left the worst taste in your mouth?
Well, I mean, we have to look at the Jan Mahimi contract, because we're still dealing with the ramifications of that contract.
Yeah.
I think that the thing about the contract that is so flawed to me is not the fact that they gave the money to Mahimi, is the fact that they already had a center on board, and that it's not very forward thinking as a general manager, because of the fact that you could see where the NBA is going. I mean, that was pretty much the 2016, that was the height. You know, the Golden State reign, the you know, the 3-and-D, the small ball analytics movement, and instead of, you know, him, you know, kind of trying to go with that movement, he's kind of antiquated with his thinking, and I think that is a major problem with the Wizards as an organization, that with them not being as forward thinking as, you know, some of the better organizations in the NBA right now.
To me, I think it was the Randy Foy and Mike Miller trade back in 2009.
Yeah,
that was a rough one.
That number 5 pick, and they could have had a lot of different players with that number 5 pick in 2009. And to give it up for Randy Foy and Mike Miller, especially when, you know, you already had, you know, a young core and you were in a rebuilding mode, there was no need to, you know, go for trying to win at the moment, knowing that you didn't have the surrounding pieces around them. Randy Foy and Mike Miller are, you know, they're good veterans in the NBA, but they're role players. You know, they need to be around other superstars in order for them to be as effective as they possibly can be.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, no, I agree with you. That trade right there was something in also the 2011 draft pick, though, with Jan Vesely number six. You start looking at the guys they could have taken, Klay Thompson and Kawhi Leonard,
Draymond Green.
You know, guys like that, that's kind of inexcusable.
By the way,
Jan Vesely, who, you know, he couldn't shoot. You know, they drafted him knowing that he was a project.
Thinking he'd be more athletic than all of the players who you know, went through the college system in the U.S. It's just, you know, it doesn't make sense.
Exactly. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And then, so, you know, I think that I would probably have to go with that 2011 as one of Ernie's biggest blemishes. But, I mean, the Mahimi contract, I don't know. Like I said, it's probably a little bit of recency bias because of the fact that, you know, Mahimi is still on the roster. And, you know, we're looking at why can't the Wizards add anybody this summer. It's because, well, you know, they got basically $16 of dead money on the books going to a center who played, you know, less than 10 minutes per game in the postseason.
And then when you look at the 2009 draft and some of the players that the Wizards let slip by, obviously it was the number 5 pick. So, Steph Curry, Ricky
draft.
Rubio.
DeMar Rosen went behind that 5 pick.
Patrick Beverley even would have been better.
Yeah, I mean,
a lot of guys.
They could have had a number of players. Any player that you could name after that would have been, you know, a better contributor than Jan Vesely at the time.
That's true. Well,
the Wizards had 2 picks that year, if I recall. Wasn't Chris Singleton was picked in that draft? 18 or 19 by the Wizards. So basically, they blew 2 picks in that one draft.
Singleton, he was with Vesely. Actually, you're right. He was 18, and then Shelvin Mack. The Wizards got Shelvin Mack, too. Yeah, I mean, when I read off some of these names of the guys that the Wizards drafted since 2000, I don't know if he took over in 2003, or let's start with 04. Devin Harris was solid. John Peter Ramos, 32 pick, did nothing. Andre Block, huge disappointment. Alexei Petrov and Vladimir Veremenko, 2006.
I don't even think the most staunch Wizards fan will be able to pick out of a lineup.
Nick Young had his moments, but he was a bonehead. Dominic McGuire never did much. Next year, JaVale also had his moments, but also shacked in a fool just every single game. Bill Walker, I don't know who he is. Jermaine Taylor in 2009. Oh, here's a good pick, 2010, John Wall, and then Laser Haywood, and I feel like I know this guy, Nemanja Bjelica. He's on the Wolves now, right? Maybe.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's someone else. I don't know.
And then Trevor Booker was Trevor Booker in the 2010 draft? That was a decent.
That must have been a trade because I don't see the Wizards taking him. But yeah, that he's contributed well. The only good draft all around I see is 2012, which involved Brad and Toma. Yeah, so that was a good one.
Saturansky, you know, he didn't end up coming over for 3 years, but you know, that's you know, kind of the new norm in the NBA right now, the draft and stash players.
I think one of the big things is that Ernie just sees a draft pick as a way to get rid of players who he doesn't like on the roster and doesn't necessarily think forward enough into, you know, what would happen. So, like, you look at 2014, trading the second round pick Jordan Clarkson for cash considerations. Nobody really expected a guy who's getting drafted 46 to have an impact, but it's just, you know, you need to give your team a chance to grow organically, right? And
that
hasn't happened.
And I think that when you look at that, when you trade away draft picks for cash considerations, and it goes back to my original point with, you know, what is the objective of, you know, this Ted Leonsis and Ernie Grunfeld era of the Wizards? You know, is it to build the best team as possible, or, you know, is Ted looking out for the bottom line there? Because, you know, I'm sure that, you know, Ted is telling him, hey, if you can pick up an extra, you know, $700,000, you know, that helps him out for his bottom line. And, you know, they can trade away that second round draft pick and not develop players like Jordan Clarkson. You know, and Clarkson's not a world beater by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, he could have developed and, you know, could have been a player who could have been supplementing some of these Wall and Beal lineups throughout their tenure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have one more question for you before we end this thing, Troy. So do you feel any similarities this past season with all the ups and downs and disappointment and, you know, some of the veteran guys who they brought in and didn't really have as much of a contribution as you would have expected, like Jody Meeks and maybe Jason Smith, who actually came in the year before. But does it seem similar to the 2015-2016 year, right after Paul Pierce left the team and the Wizards were kind of knocking on the doorstep of that Eastern Conference Finals berth, but John Wall broke his wrist and the Wizards lost to the Hawks. Do you feel like it's a similar situation in terms of the way that, I mean, clearly different free agency periods because Jan Mahimni was the gold medal of their free agency the summer before that season, and then they had to take care of business with Otto Porter and not letting him walk and go to the Nets, and of course locking John Wall up and making some small other pieces. The only guy that John Wall said was a good pickup this offseason in so many words was Mike Scott, and of course he performed well. He might not be affordable most likely to the Wizards anymore, but do you see any parallels, or is it kind of just, you know, this is a disappointing season, we didn't really have enough money to make a good move, or is it, you know, an entirely different beast because Beal's more developed, Porter's more developed now?
No, I do see similarities, though. The similarities that I see with those two seasons in question are the fact that the Wizards came into both respective seasons, you know, kind of, I don't know, they assumed that they were much better than they mm-hmm. actually were in both of those instances.
Right.
So in that 2015-2016 season, like you said, they were coming off of, you know, the playoff run against the Atlanta Hawks, where, you know, every Wizards fan has literally sold themselves on the fact that if John Wall hadn't gotten injured, you know, they would have been in the conference finals that year. And I somewhat agree with that because, you know, when John Wall played in that series, they dominated the Hawks that year. But I think that they came into the next season thinking that they were better than what they were. And I think that one of the biggest problems with this current iteration of the Wizards is the fact that, you know, they tend to talk a lot of trash and not be able to back it up. Mm-hmm. So I think that one of their weaknesses has been, you know, they don't tend to, you know, kind of play up to the level that they think they are. So, you know, coming into that season, they thought that, you know, they were going to be, you know, world beaters, that they were, you know, right there on the doorstep of reaching the conference finals. And then, you know, after they lost Paul Pierce, they didn't really have the leader on the roster that they needed in order to compete at that level. Right. And then Wall and Bill were still, Bill was hurt a lot that year. He's still going through those stress reactions in his lower leg. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's behind him because, you know, he's finally fully grown into his grown man body now. So I think that's
his daddy body, right?
Yeah, dad exactly. Bod.
Extreme.
But I think that the Wizards, honestly, they assume too much of themselves. So with both of those seasons, so in this season, they came in, you know, they're talking trash before the season. All the Cavs, you know, they ducked to play them and, mm-hmm. you know, they had the better team than the Celtics, but, you know, they lost in seven because, you know, they didn't have a bench. And, you know, they're saying a lot of things. And John Wall's calling out Lonzo Ball at the beginning of the season.
That was Martin Gortat. That was Gortat. Let's get the record straight. That was Gortat saying that Wall was going to torture him.
Gortat said that John Wall was going to destroy him.
Yeah.
But you have to realize, I mean, that Gortat's not saying this stuff out of nowhere. They're probably having internal discussions about, you know, what he's going to do. But either way, what is known is that trash talk has been coming out of the Wizards camp, and, you know, to this point, they haven't been able to back it up.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I think that, you know, there are a lot of similarities in those seasons. You know, I remember Jared Dudley from that year, him being the veteran presence there, mm-hmm. and, you know, I think that he was kind of a stabilizing presence, but he didn't really have the talent level to kind of, you know, back up, you know, or for them to respect him as much as they respected Paul Pierce.
Yeah.
So, and I think that the Wizards have been searching for that, you know, that kind of vocal leader or just that steadying force in order to, you know, kind of lead John and Brad in the right direction so they can grow to be the leaders that they need to be.
If you were to make any suggestions to Ernie Grunfeld over this offseason, would you want to trade one of the key pieces, like trading Otto Porter, one of the max money guys, or do you feel like there are ways to, you know, astutely package Jan Mahimni or Martin Gortat with a draft pick in a way that benefits the team right now and still kind of builds for a future at the same time? Like, what would be your idea? Because you mentioned that a veteran would be nice, but at the same time, like, you've given away way too many draft picks, and it would, you know, the best asset the Wizards have right now is their number 15 draft pick.
Exactly. The direction that I would take if I were running the Wizards franchise, I would probably try to trade Gortat, and not even to get back an asset. I would try to just literally try to trade him to get his money off of the books. Mm-hmm. I would definitely hold on to the number 15 pick. I would scout my ass off and make sure that, you know, that pick is a player that you can, you know, develop into an NBA player. I would move Jan Mahimi into the starting lineup and, you know, just kind of wait it out with his contract and see what it is that you have. Right. And as far as trading away a member of the quote unquote big three, you know, I would not trade Wall or Bill. I think that there's still, you know, room for them to grow as players, and that they can be the foundation of a, you know, Eastern Conference contending team. Now, Otto Porter is a different situation. I would be amenable to trading Otto Porter, but I wouldn't just trade him to be getting rid of him. I would be using Otto Porter as leverage to try to trade up and see if they could get, you know, a superstar player. So, you know, if Kawhi Leonard seems, you know, as disgruntled as everyone thinks that he is in San Antonio, you know, dangling Otto Porter out there might be something that the Spurs are interested in. You know, right. I think that Otto Porter, the way that he plays basketball, would be, you know, a perfect San Antonio Spur. And I would be willing to give up Porter if we were to bring back a caliber player like a Kawhi Leonard. Or maybe they could do a sign and trade and get Paul George. Or even DeMarcus Cousins, if they're able to trade away Gortat. You bring in Cousins and have him be the starting center. But if they can't do that, if they can't use Otto Porter to trade up, I would just, you know, make minor moves around the fringes of the roster. You know, try to trade away Gortat. Try to, you know, get as many good players in on the mid-level exception. See if you can, you know, try to convince Mike Scott to, you know, take a hometown discount with him being from the Virginia area, and then try to get Wall and Bill to come back with a new focus next year and see if their improved leadership skills can, you know, kind of lead this team to a better record.
I wish that Porter would be enough to lure a guy like Kawhi Leonard, who's probably unhappy, but I feel like teams like Boston, who could offer Jaylen Brown or an extra pick or things like that, might have the leg up on the Wizards. We'll see how it shakes out.
I mean, we're assuming that Boston would want to trade away Brown or Tatum. You know, they might be looking at their young players and deciding that they, you know, want to stand pat.
Yeah.
But I think that and then also those players are on their rookie contracts.
Of course.
So it would make it much more difficult for Boston to be able to make a trade of that nature. With Otto Porter having already signed his max extension, you know, the money would match up a little bit better. But like I said, this is all very much assumptions going off of what they can or cannot do. But I think that, you know, I think that a lot of the fan base is, you know, kind of they kind of want the team to have this major overhaul and, you know, get a fire sale and getting rid of everybody. And I don't think that that is really possible or necessarily the answer. I think that, you know, they what Wall said in his exit interview, getting an athletic big. I think that,
right.
Oh, that could, you know, something. And it doesn't even have to be, you know, a top tier, you know, athletic big. Maybe you can, you know, if, like I said, some miracle, you can find some team out there that will take Gortat's contract. Maybe you can go out and sign a Dewayne Dedman type of player who can come in and, you know, just be more athletic. Give the Wizards I think that there are two dimensions that the Wizards are missing as a team right now with their big men. Number one is they need somebody who can play above the rim. Like, there's a whole dimension of the court that the Wizards are kind of missing out on because really nobody on the Wizards team plays above the rim. And then on the defensive end, I think that, you know, the way that the NBA is now set up with the, you know, with the pick and rolls, most of these teams, these sets that they're running, you know, they're going to, you know, attack matchups where they can get the switches of a big man onto one of their guards. And as we saw, our big men are not capable of defending that right now. So if we can just get somebody who can come in and, you know, competently defend the pick and roll as a big man out on the perimeter, you know, that would work wonders as far as, you know, helping the Wizards out with their defensive coverages and, you know, giving them a real opportunity to compete with you know, these other forward-thinking teams like Philadelphia or Toronto or Boston.
Yeah, and when you mention the Wizards' lack of big men, rim protection obviously is a huge need for the Wizards, as John Wall was the leader in that category, 1.1 blocks a game. Martin Cortat was next, 0.7. So, yeah, a rim protector and someone who can score off the bench. The Wizards have toyed around with a bunch of different point guards. I think that Ty Lawson would be a good player to keep around. I'm sure they can keep him for cheap because he only played 6 games this whole season in the NBA. So, Troy, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for kind of debriefing everyone on the situation that the Wizards are in, where they re-signed months and months ago Ernie Grunfeld to a 1-year extension without telling anybody. Can you tell everyone where they can find you on Twitter? Or?
Yeah, so my Twitter handle is Troy Halliburton. That's TROYHALIBUR. And you can find most of my writing on truthabout.net. I do some freelancing for numberfire.com. I've been doing some writing for WSA9 Sports as of recently. So yeah, I mean, I put up links to all of my work on my Twitter feed. So anybody who wants to read some depressing Wizards takes over the summer, they can go there and find all the takes that you need.
No, it was really good stuff. I read your playoff coverage. It's definitely truthaboutit. .net is a great place to find lots of talented writers and good news, and it's been around since, you said, 08, so that's really good. It's got some history. And if you want to check out, subscribe to the Locked On Wizards podcast, I definitely recommend that. You can do so on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, SoundCloud, AudioCloud? Yeah, SoundCloud, my bad, I'm losing my titles, but and also hit us up on Twitter at Locked On Wizards. I'm Noah_Getzel, GOETZEL, and finally follow Wizards Extra as well. We do in-game coverage for all the home games, lots of videos posted, we got some exit interview videos, so lots of good stuff coming throughout the summer with all the draft and summer league and free agency stuff that we've got going on. Troy, I appreciate it, have a great night, and thanks a ton for joining.
I appreciate it, thank you so much for having me on, Noah.